All right, hour two of the Lake Show. And I told you that we would have Jeff Hayden, former senator here in the great state of Minnesota, joining us to talk politics here. First off, this has been a while since we had you in studio. Happy. I know that we shouldn't be saying Happy New Year. I know that it's the 14th, but this is the first time I've seen you here in the new year. Right. So I'm going to say Happy New Year.
Happy
How you been, man?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's a fresh year. It's cold outside. The legislature is kind of in session.
Yes.
So it's my time of year. I'm ready for it. I'm here for it.
And that's where we want to start. We're going to get to Pete Hegseth a little bit later, but definitely this segment, I want to ask you about what's going on. Minnesota House Democrats, they boycott the first day of the session. Kind of walk people through the dynamics of the first day of the legislative session, typically, and what's going on specifically this year, the way it's set up.
Yeah, normally what would happen is this is the first year of a biennium, meaning that the Minnesota, the way that the legislature set up their bienniums, their two-year budget process, and the House of Representatives get elected every 2 years. Minnesota Senate gets elected every 4 years, with the exception of the redistricting year. Then the Minnesota Senate has a two-year term and then goes back to 4 years.
Okay.
So we're just right in the middle of the Senate's term, which was 4 years. We're halfway through, and we're in a new biennium, so that meant that all 134 House members were up for election.
Okay.
So the governor's office and the what we call the constitutional officers, as Secretary of State, State Auditor, Attorney General, and the Governor and Lieutenant Governor, weren't up for election. So this year, long, you know, we got the national stuff. We saw the election between Vice President Harris and President-elect Trump. The Minnesota House is up for election. So an extraordinary thing happened. It's only happened once ever in the state's history.
In history, yeah.
Is that the voters went to the polls and they came back with 67. There's 134 House members, House of Representative members. They came back with 67 Democrats and 67 Republicans in the House. So that was a tie, not a virtual tie, a tie. So they started to say, uh-oh, well, what do we do here? Only happened in 1979, where they had this tie, and they went through this power-sharing agreement. This year, the two leaders, Speaker Hortman, or former Speaker Hortman, Melissa Hortman from Brooklyn Park, and then the leaders of the Republicans is the woman by the name of Lisa Damoth, and so she is either the speaker or the speaker designate. We'll get into that.
Yep.
But let's just call both of them the Democratic and Republican leaders. They came up with a strategy that said, you know what? Let's share. Let's be novel. Let's do it right. We'll co-share our speakerships. We're going to co-share all of the committee chairs.
Because it seems fair.
It seems fair because it's 67-67. And we're going to make each committee, which is really important, you know, Department of Health and Human Service, or the Transportation Committee, the Agriculture Committee, the Economic Development Committee. Let's make them even amount of members on the committee, and we'll make them co-chairs. And then we'll figure out, are we going to have a day that the Republicans hear the bills, a day the Democrats? But anyway it goes, you're going to have to, you'll be able to hear the things that you think are important. And at some point, you're going to have to get to the House floor. And this is really important here. To pass a bill on the House floor, you need 68 votes. So that's one more than the majority.
Yep.
In the Senate, there is there's an odd number there. So you need 34, right? So there's 67 senators, 134 House members. So that was going along fine. There was a little caveat to that, though, a couple. One was the Republicans said, hey, there's a guy named Curtis Johnson out in Maplewood. We've been watching this cat. And he used to live in Little Canada for many years, well-known person out in the community, very well-known politically. And he said, yeah, I'm going to move into the district.
Yep.
So
now there's a residence issue. Yes.
So he says that's what he did. He goes and gets a lease. Folk watch him and said, nah, I think the brother still lives out in Little Canada. So they watched him, surveilled him. He wins the election. It's a Democratic district by a lot, like 30 points. The Republican said, nah, the residency requirement said that you must live in the district 6 months prior to you running. And if you're in the Senate, it's a year. They said, nah, he ain't. He's still living at home. They take it to court. The judge agrees with the Republican.
Yep.
Judge says, nah, I'm looking at all the evidence, and it don't look like you established residence, and there's utilities, and there's watching his house, whatever. You can read the court case if you need to. So he could have appealed that to the Supreme Court, but he said, you know what, I'm
cool. He was
cool.
Like, you got me. Yeah,
I'm out.
Yeah, yeah,
you got
me. And I looked at that, and we talked about that here on the show, and we're like, yeah, it just makes sense. It seems like everything wasn't on the up and up.
Went on up and up. Immediately, there's a vacancy. The governor then called for a special election, mm-hmm. which actually the primary was today, and then the general election will be at the end of the month. A couple things with that. One, it's a Democratic district, so it's liable to be back to be a Democrat. But that created a 67-66 advantage for the Republicans.
For the time being.
Temporarily.
Yep.
But by the end of the month, everybody knows that that district that's on the east side of St. Paul, Maplewood, has been heavily Democratic. So the Republicans say, hey, we got an advantage here.
We got some time.
So we're going to, and by the time the legislative session starts, which was today, we'll still have the advantage. So now we good on that, on that power sharing agreement. We got the advantage. We're going to elect the speaker. We're going to elect our chairs of our committees. There's a little bit of a problem with that. The Constitution, at least from Secretary Simon, who is the convener, mm-hmm. the initial convener of the legislature before they elect their leaders, he said you need 68 votes. So the Democrats, including Secretary Simon, said the Constitution is clear. From their perspective, you need 68 votes to elect a speaker, just like you did for law.
And the Republicans dispute that. And they said that's not true.
They said,
right?
No, that's not true. They said we have an organizational majority.
Yep.
And all we need is just the votes. So they go back and forth.
They're at odds with Secretary Simon, right?
They're at odds with Secretary Simon. So Speaker Hortman, former Speaker Hortman, the Democratic leader, she said, hey, I don't like the way that this is sounding. Plus, there was an election down in Shakopee where Representative Tabke, who was the incumbent, won by 14 votes. But there was a discrepancy, 20 votes of those.
Because there was some 20...
20 of those votes
were
thrown out accidentally.
But now the judge has said they're good.
So Republicans sued on that.
Okay.
So on the one side, the Republicans win on the issue in Maplewood
to strike this.
And then they lose on this. So what happens is they go and they are intimating that they don't believe that the judge has standing to seat a member. Only they do. That the judge's ruling is advisory. So they've indicated that even when they got there, they were going to vote to put Brad Tabke out, Representative Tabke, and to expel him which triggers a special election and do it all over again. So the speaker says, I got two problems. One, looks like you're going to try to get a majority and elect a speaker, the Democratic leader, the former speaker, that you're going to try to get an advantage and vote somebody in without the votes. And secondly, you're going to expel my guy who the judge says that he believes that he won.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what a dilemma is for me, and everybody knows kind of what side of I'm on. I'm a former Democratic leader, so I'll just say it for the record.
Yep.
But let me just try to be as objective as possible. If I sue, whatever the judge says is what I should do.
Yep.
So I can't be on one side saying, yep, he's right on with that seat when the Democrats lost.
Yep.
And then come down
with the Maplewood thing, and now
with the Maplewood
different.
Thing, but then come on down to Shakopee, and I don't like what it is. And I say, nah, I ain't abiding by that.
Yeah,
I'm not abiding by that.
I can't ride with that either. I'm glad you went there because that's where I was going. Because even before the guy stepped away and said, me and Chris both talked about this on air, and we were like, nah, this seems shaky. It seems as though this person actually didn't have a real residency there. Seems like they were kind of faking it. So I'm sorry. I mean, I might be Democratic in most times when I'm voting and where my allegiances are in terms of like how I align with. I say I can't ride.
What's
with
right is right and wrong is wrong.
Exactly.
Right. But that has to work on both sides of the table.
Agreed.
I was looking at your shirt. You know, my aunt, you say what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I'm like, what's the gander? But anyway, that being said, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So today was dramatic. And I can get to the Senate a little less dramatic. So all the Republicans showed up, 67. None of the Democrats. The Democrats, by the way, swore themselves in on Sunday night.
Over the weekend, yep.
Over the weekend. Nobody knew about it. It's kind of a problem. But that being said, they swore themselves in, but they didn't show up. So they weren't on the board to vote. So Secretary Simon took the role. There was only 67. He believes it needs to be 68 to make this, to have the House duly organized.
Yep.
Then they can go and elect who they want. He goes on back to his office. He finds that the House does not have a quorum. Quorum means you got to have enough people to have a meeting.
Yep.
If you're on your Boy Scout, Girl Scout board all the way to the House of Representatives, you got to have a certain amount of people to make the meeting legit. So the Republicans say, no, we ain't doing that. They let Secretary Simon come off the roster. They walked up their oldest member, Representative Anderson, and they started their own proceedings, went forward to take the role, and then elected Lisa Damon from the eastern part of St. Cloud as their new Speaker of the House, in which the Democrats cried foul, said it's unconstitutional. You should expect to see them have a lawsuit expeditiously and have it expedited to the Supreme Court. So now here we sit, and it's kind of like two worlds, right? Like if you're a Marvel dude, it's like the Red Hawk and the Green Hawk, right? Like it's one group that says that they're elected, they're going to go about their business. It's another equally as powerful group said that this isn't okay. So we're living in a kind of a parallel universe at this moment.
All right, so if you can, in 60 seconds before we go to our first break, what is the next, like, what's the next step to for us to kind of, because this is kind of a little bit of a maze, and we have to kind of, yeah, it's a little bit of a winding road.
Totally unprecedented.
So how do, I mean, what is the next thing that we have to be following and tracking and paying attention to?
Well, the big issue is, one, that the Republicans are going to show up. The secretary is going to show up again and count them if they let him in the door and say still doesn't believe that they can organize. Republicans are going to show up and start doing business, right? The next thing that they potentially could do is send this issue of Representative Tabke's election to what they call a rules committee. That rules committee could make a recommendation to expel him. It's got to go back up to the speaker and go through a process, but they look like, and they've been signaling, that that's what they're going to do, which will make the margin even more, right? So the next thing to do is to watch that. The Democrats are going to stay home in their districts, still continue to do their work, meet with their constituents, but they said they're not showing up until they can get some, either an agreement from the Republicans, or they get some guidance or an order from the Supreme Court, who's often reluctant to get involved with legislative business.
Can we just be honest for a second? None of this helps the people of Minnesota, right?
None of this is helping the people of Minnesota. People of Minnesota expected, as a former member, they expect for me to get my tail up here in January and get to work and do the things that they need for me to do.
Yep.
So the Senate is organized, and we can get into that in the next segment. They're organized. They had a problem. A former Senator, Kerry Desick, passed away.
Yep.
They're having their own special election today, but they decided to have the power-sharing agreement until they got to the majority folks, which would be at the end of the month. So they're kind of okay.
And that was with Jeremy Miller and Bobby Joe Champion.
Yeah, Jeremy Miller and Bobby Joe Champion. Yep. They'll, till the end of the month, they presume, because it's northeast Minneapolis, southeast Minneapolis, and the University of Minnesota, heavily Democratic. So whoever comes out of that election, and I should probably look, polls are probably just closed, whoever comes out of that is likely to be the next senator in north to southeast Minneapolis, who will be a Democrat, and then we'll put the Democrats in control in the Senate. There is a caveat to that, though,
okay. And
it is Senator Nicole Mitchell, and
she's trying to get
that's trying to get the hearing moved. She was accused of breaking into her stepmother's house. And this whole issue, and her trial is expected to start January 27th. She's trying to get that moved to May so that it doesn't interfere with the legislative session.
No question. All right, Jeff Hayden joining us in studio. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Want to talk about Pete Hegseth as well. We'll do that next year on The Late Show. All righty, we got Jeff Hayden joining us in studio talking politics. A couple other things that we want to talk to with the former Minnesota senator. And where we left off, get back to the Senate. You wanted to mention
absolutely,
and clear something up before we get to Pete Hegseth.
So what happened in the Senate was, unfortunately, my good friend, former leader Kerry Desick, passed away of cancer right over the holidays. So they went to 30. They were 34, 33 Democrats. They went to 33-33. Majority Leader Murphy, Minority Leader Johnson, the Republican Senator Champion, and other more senior members got together and said, we don't really like what's going on in the House. This is probably going to be another Democratic seat. So what they did is they spent the next 3 weeks just co-leading, getting through the Senate business, getting through some of the things that they have. By the end of the month, it should be back to a 34-33 Democratic lead. Now, there is this caveat of Senator Mitchell from Woodbury that's asking for a continuance of her trial to come after the session, or it could happen at the end of January, in which she won't be able to be present to vote on anything. So that could put a little bit of a change there. And if for some reason she was found, so, you know, she's being adjudicated. If she's innocent, she'll probably come back and be fine. If she's found guilty, then there is a mechanism to expel her under kind of moral turpitude kind of stuff. Big words in the statute that she'll probably either resign or be expelled. Now she has to go through the process, and I believe that we should do it. So that's the Minnesota Senate, but they seem, and I've been in both bodies, but they call themselves the higher body, the upper body for a reason. They seem to have themselves a little more kind of engaged on making sure
they got more
that they're
order.
Working. Yeah, and they got more work. So I know we wanted to try to transition just a little bit into what's going on nationally.
Nationally, what were your takeaways from the hearing today with Pete Hegseth?
Yeah, it was rough. Everything from his...
It depends on who you talk to. Some people feel like he didn't have that bad of a day.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, from the moral issues that people talked about, I know, you know, people are human beings, and I know that I don't really want all my private stuff aired out over time. It looked like he had a lot going on from, you know, addiction issues that I think he's taking care of, or at least, I don't know if he's admitted he's addicted, but alcohol issues to issues in his personal life, but also issues about his competency, and did he understand the job, and did he understand the regions and all the various alliances. I know Senator Duckworth talked about it. He particularly took it hard from women around combat and were they combat eligible, especially from Senator Duckworth, who like has no legs, right? And I think a half an arm because in combat she got injured. You know, on the flip hand side, and then the other issue of he was a major in the National Guard, and typically people in those positions are generals and have been generals for a long time in like the actual military, or not that the guard. Let me be careful, my guardsmen. But active duty military, I guess is what I'll say. Now, on the flip hand side, if you're looking for somebody who's going to shake things up, if you're looking for somebody who really going to give you kind of red meat, full-blooded machismo, and is very good friends with the president, then, you know, he is a media person like yourself, Lake, so he knows how to handle himself in front of a microphone. And so from that perspective, I thought that he did a good job. He didn't break. I don't know if I did a good job, but the questions that he had in his inability to answer some of the basic questions and some of the things that come to light about his character, I thought was pretty tough.
Well, one of the things, and this is one of the statements that came up with Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois. She says, we asked troops to man that ship, fight that fire, fly that helicopter, and to do into their very last breath. And they do that every single day. They cannot be led by someone who is not competent to do the job. Also, something that came up was about an audit. And she asked a direct question about the audit with something about a discrepancy with some veteran stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And to me, those direct questions, he kept trying to tiptoe around it. Wasn't direct with his answers.
Yeah.
That was a little bit... It didn't come across good.
You know, I spent a little time in the late 80s in the military.
She said yes or no, and he would never get to.
Yeah, and I didn't, I didn't see combat. You know, I don't talk about it in a way of God bless the, you know, the folks that have been, you know, when the bullets are coming back on the other way, like it's real, right? And so, but let me say this, you know, all of the officers that I serve with, the non-commissioned officers, the sergeants, the tech sergeants, the generals, commanders, colonels, like these people are of high, high integrity and have a lot of experience, and they're really highly competent individuals. It appears to me that, you know, Mr. Hegseth, you know, I think rose to the ranks of major, which is not bad, in the National Guard, the DC National Guard, the Minnesota National Guard. Once again, wonderful organization. just glad they're here. They do a lot of kind of stuff. I don't know if even that in of itself, much less his moral issues that are being brought out, it does that get him to lead the military as a whole? We're talking 3- and 4-star generals. The Secretary of the Air Force right now, who's running it, is a 4-star general, happens to be an African-American guy who flew F-18s in Iraq. I mean, you know what I mean? Like these types of Colin Powell type people, right? And it just doesn't look like that Hegseth's there. It looks like he's there because he was on Fox News, spoke really highly of the president, and had some really kind of, you know, I would say, you know, at best, sexist things about the way he feels about women in combat. And I think that's where Tammy Duckworth took offense to it, is that they believe, and I do too, I believe that women can be in combat as long as the same kind of strategy, you can lift the same amount of weight, march the same, you can get in a plane and figure out how to fly it and do your work. I think that we should be able to have everybody serve. And I think he's suggesting that a lot of people who are serving right now and who have served shouldn't serve because they're not a male.
Mm. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that for 1 second. But it's going to be interesting. Well, it's hard to gauge or make a guess as to whether he's going to get confirmed or not. But How would you describe how it looks right now?
Well, I mean, I think that this is a real test for the president. So the issue is, like, they're going to go over his qualifications. But at the end of that, it doesn't really matter if the senators that the Republican senators have made up their mind and they're going to and they're going to push him forward. That's the process. So if they're looking the other way, or they said we owe the president this, or it's OK, or we want somebody outside the box, or whatever way in which you talk, irrationalize yourself. But or, you know, listen, I don't want to get on the wrong side of the president, Elon Musk, and all these cats that are walking around here threatening people, literally threatening people if they don't do what the president says, that they can look up and have a primary in their own party. Like, there's a whole bunch of things going on behind the scenes that get people there. What I would hope is that when I raise my hand to the Constitution to say I'm going to do the best that I can do to the best of my ability, I hope that they remember that. Yes. I hope that they don't let the pressure get to them. I hope that they say, you know what, is this gentleman, is he qualified? And they got to do that for all of the folks that the president, you know, they get the consent, right, to push forward, and they nominate and they can consent or dissent. And I hope that everybody takes a really good look at these cabinet positions because they're extremely important, especially right now, and make sure that they're getting the right guy.
I just, you know, what Hegseth, to think that he could be over the biggest, essentially, department. I mean, that just, that part I think people got to be real careful with. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a big, I mean, that's a big job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, like, I mean, like, you probably could do a good job being the chairman of the FCC, right? Like, I mean, you know, what you're doing. You've been behind the microphone a lot of times, but like, you know, we'd have to check that out. That's a big job, right? It's a lot of stuff going on. And it is, and I don't mean that, like, this is an important job that you guys do. This is really, really important to get the information out there. But we're talking about large bureaucracies, right? And in particular in the defense, like, we are asking mostly young men and women to put themselves in harm's way. And sometimes the best thing is that you go there and you don't come back. But a lot of folks we see in the commercials, they come back with half limbs and arms and traumatic brain injuries. They're never the same again. And we're asking them to do that. And the person who leads them should be a competent individual that we know, right? Not just, you know, and he'll tell you, oh, I got over to Iraq a few times, but this should be somebody that we know that when they're advising the commander in chief, which is the president, on where we should deploy our resources, which are people, young men and young women, when we're deciding to do that, that person's competent.
When we need somebody to break it down, we bring Jeff Hayden into the mix, and he's done a phenomenal job for the last 30 minutes. Hey, Jeff, man, let's do it again soon.
Anytime.
Silton's going to be back in studio in the next couple of days.
Yeah, call Stevie, man. That's my boy.
All right, coming up next, we haven't forgot. We usually do it at 7:20, but, you know, we got Jeff Hayden in studio, but we're going to do it now. We got Bite of the Night. That's next year, after weather on the Lake Show. All right, the bite of the night tonight is a television soundbite, and it's about the Palisades fires and the California fires that have been going on in the L.A. area for the last, week or so. And there was an individual that was helping with the fires, okay? And this individual is on camera talking to a reporter from KTLA and letting them know what they're trying to do. He's trying to send out a message about how to help in terms of moving vehicles, okay, in the area to try to assist with the fires, okay? Letting people know that if you're going to leave your vehicle there and abandon it, you need to do something with leaving the keys there because this is not a parking lot. We're trying to make sure that everybody's taken care of, and we are all just trying to assist. We're all just trying to help. But in this moment, the reporter doesn't know who they're talking to, and it happens to be a pretty popular actor.
But I wonder if I could just make, here on Palisades Drive, if anybody has a car and they leave their car, leave the keys in the car so that we can move your car so that these fire trucks can get up Palisades Drive.
Yeah.
What's happening is people take their keys with them as if they're in a parking lot. This is not a parking lot.
Yeah.
We really need people to move their cars. So if you leave your car in Palisades Drive, leave the key in there so a guy like me can move your cars and get them up there so that these fire trucks can get up there. It's really, really important.
Thank you for talking to us live, sir. What's your name?
My name is Steve Gutenberg.
Steve, do you live in this area?
I live in the area. Yeah, I live right up the hill. And thank goodness everybody. But I have friends up there right now. Yeah. And they can't evacuate because it's stuck on Palisades Drive.
Yeah. And you're an actor.
Yeah, I'm an actor.
All right, so clearly the reporter is not hip on who Steve Gutenberg is. And Steve Gutenberg from Police Academy, I mean, super popular, and I get it. People got masks on and all this stuff, and they're trying to, but like, I didn't see the, and I've heard the clip now multiple times. I didn't see the actual video of it, but you don't even need to see the video. You can hear audibly that, like, the reporter, Chris, doesn't realize who he's standing there talking to. Like, when the name Steve Gutenberg hit, it doesn't resonate with them.
Yeah, the reporter didn't know. And as I was telling you, kind of, you know, when I came across it, and I know it's a few days old, but I just thought this was a really good example of a celebrity not giving thoughts and prayers, not, you know, this is putting your money where your mouth is, right? What does it say? Put up or shut up? Steve Gutenberg was out there fighting these fires and trying to help his neighbors. And the reporter was like, oh, you know, thanks. What is your name? Steve Gutenberg. He still didn't know anything.
Yep.
And then he put his finger to his ear with the IFB. And then his producer must have told him, hey, he's a famous actor.
He's a big deal.
You're an actor. And he's like, yeah, I'm an actor.
Yeah. And this is a classic case of this is not Steve Gutenberg, like, jumping in front of the cameras, trying to tell everybody who he is and all this other stuff, whatever. He didn't even reveal who he was until the reporter asked him who he was.
No, he wasn't doing this for publicity. And
no.
Who would have known that Mahoney from Police Academy would have been one of the guys that would have stepped up during these California fires?
Yep. Police Academy.
What's that?
That's where the commandant and his wife live.
Oh, excuse me.
Do you know where we go to get our clothes?
Yeah. You got to go right over there.
Here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Just go right in and tell them that Mahoney sent you.
Got it.
We got here by 3:00.
Police Academy is a classic.
It's a classic.
Police Academy is a classic. I will fight anybody out there that tries to tell me that Police Academy isn't a classic.
I mean, Tackleberry? I mean, that's the show that make Michael Winslow, like, famous.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't know anything about Michael Winslow until Police Academy. But man, think about the names that were there. And then you've got somebody like Steve Gutenberg. And by the way, Three Men and a Baby with Tom Selleck and Ted Danson. I mean, it's not quite Police Academy. But I mean, still, the one thing about Three Men and a Baby is like the scene where they've got the ghost in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the biggest thing about Three Men and a Baby. But it's still pretty cool to see a celebrity and apparently not a very recognizable name just go out there and be like, yeah, I'm out here. I'm just a person trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, well, like, other than Steve Guttenberg, who was like your favorite out of Police Academy? Because Michael Winslow clearly was, I mean, he's phenomenal.
Michael Winslow, I do like the guy who played Tackleberry.
Okay.
I don't remember his name, but I know that he also played a cop in a couple of Seinfeld episodes.
Oh, David Groff or whatever?
Yeah. I couldn't remember his name, but I think that was primarily Steve Guttenberg.
I was a big fan of Callahan.
Yeah, I bet you were. Yeah, I mean, I could. Yeah, Callahan.
Leslie Easterbrook. She was phenomenal.
She was phenomenal. Okay. Is she better or worse than Shannon Tweed?
I'm more of a Shannon Tweed.
Okay, you still got the need for Tweed.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you ever Google up Chris Allen, by the way? Chris Allen from Emmanuel?
I did not. I'm sorry. I'll do that when I get home tonight. Yeah. I totally forgot.
Well, yeah, that's an evening Google. Like, that's an evening Google. Not Guten Google.
Oh, my goodness.
But pretty cool to – I saw that, and with everything that's going on in the world of the wildfires and everything, I'm like, let's just have a positive, like something positive to talk about when it comes to this, because we know that there's just a lot of bad things going on. But
this is also one of those things where there's certain people that will hear this soundbite, and there's certain people that will be like, oh, Hollywood elites, the Hollywood elites. This is an actor that's trying to help out everybody.
He's trying to save.
You know how people are, man.
Yeah, that's true. He wasn't sleepy, so I guess maybe he's woke. Steve Wokenberg. No, I don't know. I don't care. Like, politics, when it comes to this, should matter. But yeah, that he was out there. I mean, he wasn't out there for the publicity, because some people are out there just for the photo op. But if you look at him, had the mask on, had like, he was just out there. And I mean, I can understand what he was saying. Like, hey, move your damn cars so people can get in and out. And, you know.
And he wasn't saying it in a mean way.
No,
he was
like,
hey, to put everybody in the best position possible, please, if you do have to leave your vehicle, have your keys in there.
Yeah.
And I know that there are some people that would be like, well, hold on. Why am I going to leave? Somebody will steal my car. No one's stealing your car in this exact moment because we're in the midst of massive fires.
Yeah. There's a lot of things to be concerned about. Stealing your car at that point.
That's not one of them.
I mean, it would be kind of cool to say Steve Guttenberg, like, Guttenberg, valet parked my car. That'd be kind of cool.
All right.
I couldn't say Guttenberg.
651-461-9226. Coming up next, we've got headlines right here on The Lake Show. And let's dive right into headlines here on The Lake Show. It's time to let Christopher Tubbs break down some stories and get my reaction to said stories.
And by breaking down, you mean just read them to you?
Yes.
So it's really story time.
Yes.
Okay.
Headlines time.
Hey, Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth, and something you were just talking about with Jeffrey Hayden, and great to have him in studio. Like, so much fun.
He breaks it down. You politics for dummies?
Yeah.
He just breaks it down for us.
I mean, I could actually understand what he was saying, kind of like a line item. Like, I'm like, okay, I understand A to B to C to D. I mean, there's a lot of this gobbledygook. It's just, it's over my head. But yes, it was great to have him in. Hey, Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth publicly faced senators for the first time today after weeks of privately pushing back on criticism over his qualification and personal past. The 44-year-old Army National Guard veteran, former Fox News Channel weekend host, and native of Forest Lake, Minnesota. So he's one of us. He's faced strong criticism from Democrats over his thin resume compared to previous defense secretaries, including allegations of excessive drinking, sexual assault, and mismanagement of veterans' organization finances, all of which he denies. Many Republicans have been vocally supportive of Hegseth's nomination, but others have remained noncommittal as the reports have surfaced about his past behavior. President-elect Donald Trump has remained strongly supportive of Hegseth, who has worked to win favor with Senate Republicans in one-on-one meetings over the last month. Trump posted on social media in December that, quote, Pete is a winner and there is nothing that can be done to change that, ! South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds, a Republican member of the Armed Services Panel, said Hegseth has been straightforward with Republican senators that he knows will have to address some of the allegations against him. Rounds said, quote, I think he will, and at the same time, we'll give him ample opportunity to talk about what he believes his role would be as secretary, the vision that he has for the department. Rowland says he expects to support Hegseth unless anything changes. I think the president gets the benefit of a doubt with his nominees.
Now, respectfully, the mismanagement of the veterans organization finances stuff, the sexual assault allegations and stuff like that, that stuff he denies. He's not denying the allegations of excessive drinking, though, right? Like,
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, I don't.
I haven't heard that.
Part of the denying. Like, that's when you sit in front of Congress and you're talking about you're not a perfect person, you're essentially saying, yeah, I've got some
you're admitting faults.
Yeah, yeah. And we all have them. We all have
faults.
Yeah,
we do. Yep.
There are levels to this, though.
Yes. Hey, six Massachusetts college students are being accused of using the dating app Tinder to lure an unsuspecting man to campus and assault him as part of a catch a predator fad on TikTok.
What?
Yeah, this according to police. The Assumption University, that's a great name for a university considering what's happening.
The Assumption University.
Assumption
yeah.
University, that's the real name, by the way, you guys. Assumption University students are being charged with primarily with kidnapping and conspiracy charges to the plot that police say was inspired by NBC's To Catch a Predator, according to a December 4th criminal complaint obtained by USA Today yesterday. Man who police say was lured to the Central Massachusetts campus told police he was talking to a student on Tinder and that she invited him to meet her. While they were in a lounge area in the campus's alumni hall, the man told police that a group of people came out of nowhere, started calling him a pedophile, and accused of liking 17-year-old girls. Man says the group surrounded him and ended up chasing him to his car and that he was punched in the head. He had his car door slammed on him before he was able to flee. Once campus police could not find the man at the school, they received a report from Worcester Police about a man who needed help with an incident that took place on Assumption University's campus, according to a complaint. Court records show that all six students are scheduled to appear in court for arraignment on Thursday.
So hold on. First off, unacceptable, should not happen. Catfishing is still a thing, especially with all the stuff that happens online.
Mm-hmm.
But how does he? Because they're talking about liking 17-year-old girls, and I'm not excusing whatever the gentleman's behavior is, but is the gentleman 19 or is the gentleman 39?
Yeah,
or like,
it didn't say. Okay. Yeah,
I'm just saying that to me that matters.
Yeah, I would have to assume because Assumption University, I guess I should get a degree from there. I assume, no pun intended, that he was younger because you don't want to be the 39-year-old man going into a going into a dorm room, say, where are the girls? You know, that's not a good look. Hey, Ben Stiller and his wife, actress Christine Taylor, are known to be one of Hollywood's longest and happiest marriages, but that has not always been the case. In an interview with the New York Times, Stiller was asked about he and Taylor, who married in 2000, having to split for a bit. Stiller told the publication that when his film Zoolander 2 came out in 2016, their marriage, quote, wasn't in a good place. He was asked about Taylor's appearance on the Drew Barrymore show, where she discussed separation and reconciliation being a result of what she called adult growth spurts. When we separated, it was just having space to see what our relationship was, what my life felt like when we weren't in that relationship, how much I love our family unity, told the Times. It was like 3 or 4 years that we weren't together, but we always were connected. In my mind, I never didn't want us to be together. I don't know where Christine was. You'd have to ask her, but COVID put us all together in the same house. According to Stiller, it was almost a year living in the same house before we were actually together. But I'm so grateful for it, and I think that not many people do come back together when they separate. There's nothing like that. When you come back, you have so much more appreciation for what you have because we know we could not have it. A couple share a daughter and a son, Ella, in Quinlan.
The so far, 2025 has not been a good year for Hollywood couples. We've already seen Jessica Simpson.
Oh, and her, yeah.
They have separated, and then the other person is
that may be in Word in the Street.
Jessica Alba. And her and Cash, I thought they would have been together forever. So maybe it's just the Jessica name.
Wow. Well, I mean, Jessica Biel, we'll have to see what happens with her. Jessica's and Jennifer's and...
I personally like Jessica's. I've dated a Jessica.
Okay, good for you. I mean, that's great. I've never dated a Jessica, but you know what? I'm gonna.
You're missing out.
I'm missing out.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm happily married to a Kimberly, not a Jessica, and I'm cool with that. I love my wife. I love where I'm at. And by the way,
I figured
the couple of Christine Taylor and Ben Stiller, Love them both together. Like Dodgeball, great. Zoolander, great. And finally here, like one more. Rashida Jones, not Quincy Jones' daughter, different Rashida Jones, stepping down as president of MSNBC.
MSNBC,
and one of her top lieutenants, Rebecca Kutler, taking over the interim network president. That's what I got to say about MSNBC.
You're not a fan?
I got to be honest, I haven't watched MSNBC much.
I haven't watched in a while lately.
No, I watch the news because it's our job.
I got you.
But, I mean, I don't know. Yes, CNN's going through some things. MSNBC is going through
some things. He's a fan. He's a fan. He's a fan. He's a fan. He's a... Anyway.
What? I don't understand that one.
That's from Not Like Us. Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. I should have known it was a... Who's that? Kendrick Lamar?
Yeah, Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick Lamar.
All right, just going to wrap up headlines. Coming up next, Starbucks. Your favorite coffee house. They're making some changes. We'll discuss it next.